You're listening to the Very Serious Crafts podcast.
We're very serious crafters,
and we craft very serious crafts.
Very serious. Hello, and welcome to episode 8 of the Very Serious Crafts podcast. I'm Haley from Red Handled Scissors.
I'm Molly from Wild Olive.
And I'm Heidi from Hands Occupied. Today we're talking about beautiful supplies, challenging crafts, and teeth.
If you miss our craft geekery and bad jokes during the weeks we don't release a new podcast, never fear. You can hang out with us on the internet every day. Yay! Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at SeriousCrafts. On Facebook at facebook.com/VerySeriousCrafts, or head on over to our website at VerySeriousCrafts.com to find everything else. So ladies, how's it going?
It's going pretty good, except I had my first podcast-related dream. It wasn't a happy dream.
Oh no! Oh, no.
It was weird. We were all guests on another podcast, and the two people who hosted it, I have no idea who they were. They were just two people hosting a podcast that wanted us, except they seemed to like you two a whole lot more than they liked
me. Oh, no! Oh, no!
To the point where they were like, we are never having her back on here again, and it just was like,
I was traumatized. Oh, my God. Oh, Molly, I'm sorry. We love you.
Yeah.
That's the thing is, this has been so wonderful for me, at least. And I thought, nobody likes me. It's terrible. Aww. These people have just been, like, pretending that I'm nice or something. I don't know. It was weird.
No. We adore you.
Well, aww. And I'm not fishing for compliments with that either. I was just kind of, like, so weird. Anyway, yeah. So that's my latest. Oh, that's... How about
goodness.
You?
Well, I went on a lace retreat with my Bobbin Lace Guild, the Brooklyn Lace Guild, to Ocean Grove, New Jersey, which is this beautiful Victorian oceanside town that's only about a square mile, and I guess it used to be this Methodist revival camp, and so there are still, like, the tents that would be around, like, where the preacher would be set up there, and I guess there's, like, a million-year waiting list to get to be the families that get to stay in these, like, really cool tents. Like, the front half is a tent, and the back half is, like, a tiny house.
Oh, cool.
Like, it's really cool. And so my lace guild and I spent a couple of days last week sitting on the porch of a Victorian house on the seaside making bobbin lace. And it was lovely.
I'm sure it was. When you shared a photo of the scene there, I thought, well, that's a very special place. It's so cool.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It was really neat. And there were a bunch of, like, because it's a Victorian town that's largely preserved, like, all of the houses are Victorians. Like, it's a very lovely, very quaint place. There are also a lot of, like, little museums, and the actual town has a little museum. And one historic house heard us talking about lace, and I guess they're not usually open during June. They don't open until July for tours, but they invited us in to look at their lace collection in their house, and it was really neat.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Nice.
Haley is making an adorable, excited face right now, and it's very charming.
It was so much fun, and it was, like, the most wholesome thing that I have maybe ever done.
Well, while you were in a picturesque ocean grove, or whatever. Yes. I took an exotic trip to Wisconsin. So last week, my husband and I we've both been working just way too much. and so we decided to get an Airbnb up in Kenosha. So we live in Chicago in the city, and it's about an hour straight north. And it was an Airbnb that was dog friendly, so our dogs could come with. It was this really beautiful on the outside green barn that had like an apartment in there, and like the area where you sleep used to be the hayloft and things like that. And it was air conditioned. The second floor of the space was actually the owner's Photoshop or photo studio, so that was cool. But it's June. It was June in Chicago when we went, and so it's rainy season. And we get there, it's really hot, and then it thunders and lightnings all night, and the roof starts leaking.
Oh no!
There were three separate leaks coming out of the ceiling, and we were there for four nights, and it leaked multiple times. So that was like super not pleasant. And then it just makes you think, like, has this been leaking for years? And how much mold is inside the ceiling of this place we're staying in for a week?
Ooh, yeah. Nope.
Yeah, it was not as picturesque as we expected.
But
oh, now I feel bad about my Ocean Grove story.
Don't feel bad. I'm jealous.
But at least you have like a very memorable trip. It will be a story you will tell for years and years to come.
Sure.
And you got a lot of knitting done, right?
In theory. Like, the point was to go to finish a knit design, and or at least, like, make significant progress on it, because I want to release the pattern in the fall. This is that same design I was talking about the graph paper with last week. But when you lose an entire, like, first 24 hours to, like, keeping your dogs from drinking the water coming out of the ceiling and, like...
Oh, no!
Trying to make sure that, like, all the food on the counter that's getting dripped on, like, your bread and stuff, trying to make sure that's not soaked with ceiling water.
Oh.
That can take a chunk that's of time gross. Out of your trip.
Oh.
So, I did get some knitting done, but, like... a quarter of what I was hoping to get done. And so that has led to my own anxiety dreams involving my teeth falling out for the first time ever. And it was only one tooth falling out in this dream, but after I had this dream, I was like, okay, I need to Google what teeth falling out and dream symbolism is, because this is a thing. Like, this is an actual phenomenon in dreams, and teeth falling out can mean a whole bunch of different things. Like, not the least of which is, like, aging. But specifically, this whole, like, fear of becoming less efficient or productive. And I was like, I can draw a direct line between my disastrous barn vacation and this teeth dream. Direct line!
No.
So...
Yeah, that's clear.
Yeah. So, have you had any anxiety dreams, Haley? I know Molly and I both are on that boat this week.
I actually, weirdly enough, also had my first ever dream where a tooth fell out.
Yep.
And, I mean, mine is sort of directly related to my current reality. There's this weird hole in my jaw that is sort of a mystery, and... I've seen many dentists and many oral surgeons recently, and so I'm just a little bit stressed out about this thing that isn't actually an active big problem right now, but mm-hmm. could be. And so I'm pretty sure that my tooth falling out dream was reality-based.
Yeah.
But it's still the first time it's ever happened. My best friend has that dream all the time, so I know it's a thing, but... That is not... I don't want to make it a habit.
Yeah, mine was specifically... I was born missing one permanent tooth, so I have an implant. And last fall, I'd had it for like a decade, and it came out on its own. And my dream was specifically about that tooth. And so when I woke up, I was convinced it was falling out for real.
Oh.
And I was in the middle of this deadline, and it was like a whole thing. Life's rough.
Now I'm worried that you guys are implanting this dream into my mind.
Oh, that was terrible.
Molly with the dad jokes.
Yep.
It's why we love you.
Someone has to. Clearly those other podcasters don't.
They're not real.
Oh, I thought you meant someone has to make the dad jokes. And I was like, wait, is that a podcasting bylaw? I missed. Never mind. I think it should be a rule. Yeah. I think we need one per episode.
Only
well,
one?
Check mark.
Like five. I don't know. I'm setting goodness. The bar low to begin with, okay?
Okay. Okay. That's probably wise.
Yeah. But, so I have basically no life balance at the moment after getting so behind on that knit design. So what fun stuff are you guys working on so I can live vicariously through you?
Well, I should have no work-life balance at this point because I have plenty of things that I could and should be doing. But I had this moment, I don't know if this ever happens to you, where you like you feel like you're kind of doing really well on your deadlines, and so you take a breath, and then all of a sudden they, you know, pile in on top of you. But so I took a breath and went down a rabbit hole, which was lots of fun. I'd been thinking of doing this for a little while, and then it kind of happened because I was thinking, hey, you know, this will be fun to check out for the podcast. So a few weeks ago, I found on my shelf a little tiny box for that says Crazy Daisy Winder. And it's probably been sitting on my shelf for a long time. And I don't know if I put it there and don't remember or if my mother put it there because that happens. But it's a vintage craft tool that this one was probably from the 30s or 40s. It's a little brass circle with a knob on the back. And when you turn it, these little spikes come out from the sides, which could look a little bit like a weapon, but it's for making these little wound daisies that then you can work into crochet projects. They made them later on in like through the 70s and stuff too, but it's sort of related to a Weave-It tool, which more recently you might know as a Zoom Loom. Mm-hmm. And I've had these Weave-It tools around for ages because they belonged to people in my family. This was kind of one of those inherited craft items that we've talked about. In fact, when I talked about this a couple episodes ago with inherited projects, one of them was pieces of an afghan made on one of these looms, these pin looms.
Mm.
But I'd never really messed around with them before. And so I was like, well, let's actually try it out. So I tried out both the Crazy Daisy Winder and the Weave-It loom. And I had much better success with the Weave-It loom. My daisy was a little lopsided, but I'll try again.
Wait, did you post a picture? Because or a video or something, because I really want to see it work.
I will have to do that because...
Please.
Yes, I will make sure that I have that ready to go in time for this episode because they're really fun. And the way that the pin loom works is you weave it back and forth, you turn it, weave it back and forth, turn it, weave it back and forth. So you get these multiple layers and then, or you're just basically winding it around the pins at that point. And then for the last layer, you actually thread yarn through a long needle that works to go through all of those layers, and that finishes it off.
Cool.
And I've seen these around in my house in you know, vintage stashes of things, you know, because I have all the vintage craft items from the family, but I've never tried it before. So then as I started looking online, I found out it's actually a fairly common thing to find. There's new books out about using them and patterns for making things out of the Crazy Daisy items. But my favorite was when I started looking into the history of this loom. This is where I get, you know, history geeky, but these looms had existed. These looms had existed for a long time in some form. This is not all that abnormal. But in 1934, the first Weave-It loom, branded Weave-It loom, came out. And it was patented because they changed up, instead of just having evenly spaced pins, they put them in groups of three, which makes it a lot easier to follow and get the spacing correct so that you can create this multi-layered square.
Mm-hmm.
Then a few years later, the Lumet came out. I also have a Lumet. and they followed the same pattern, but it was patented. So they were shut down and they had to change back to just having evenly spaced pins. And then a whole bunch of other versions of this came out until finally they stopped making them. And then fast forward to like 2007, and there was this guy at a fiber arts conference or class or something, just observing, and all of these people using vintage pin looms and talking about how they wish that you could just buy these. And they turned to him and they said, "You're a guy, you should make these." Which is a whole other thing.
I have feelings and opinions.
I thought the same thing. I was like, interesting. Hmm. But he did have a company that made spinning wheels and things along those lines. But so he's the one who made the Zoom loom. And it copies the 3-pin arrangement from the original one, which makes it so much easier. I'm assuming the patent has run out from the original Weave It loom. But as you know, I'm looking through this and I'm finding all of these websites with history and patterns to do things. And there is a pin loom weaving support group on Facebook. And I just went,
"Wait, what?"
I know. I just got very excited, and I feel like I will be making more of these squares because it is very fast to make them, and they're fun, and you can do all kinds of different things with it. So mm-hmm. I will post all of the resources I've found on the show notes for this episode so that you all can join me in my rabbit hole.
So it's funny that you've been talking about this tool that makes making squares like so quick and so easy, and I'm just feeling really jealous right now because I spent like a little bit of this week and also much of last week trying to figure out what I think should be a really simple bobbin lace pattern. But I spent the full 2 days of my retreat working on this pattern, and then we also happened to have a lace guild meeting on Saturday. And so I spent that entire time working on this pattern. And I finally, like in the last hour of the lace guild meeting, got it.
Yay!
But I spent almost 3 full days pulling, like, doing the beginning part of the pattern, not being able to wrap my mind around it, pulling out the pins, unwinding the bobbins, and doing that just over and over again. I probably restarted this pattern maybe 20 or 30 times, and I don't think that is an exaggeration. It might be slight, but not. Mm-hmm. And it's this pattern is called Rose Ground, and it's just a repeating pattern, but I could not wrap my mind around it. And it was, and that's especially frustrating to me because I am the kind of person who's generally immediately pretty good at most crafts.
Yeah.
And yeah. Bobbin lace, though it's difficult, came pretty easily to me. But I just could not make this particular pattern make sense. And it was deeply, deeply frustrating. I nearly threw my lace pillow. I swore many times, like vigorously, like my four-letter words ringing throughout
son of
this
a moth.
Victorian town. Son of a moth. And I, at the retreat, I had 2 expert lace makers walking me through this pattern. Mm-hmm. And it still didn't click. I just had to keep repeating the process over and over again until finally it all fell into place. Mm-hmm. And it's mostly sorted out, but I couldn't tell you why it works. Like, I could not explain to you how to do it. And about halfway through doing it, I have to refigure it out.
Yeah.
It's really weird and frustrating.
What's the pattern called?
It's called Rose Ground.
Rose Ground. Okay. And how many, like, little bowling pin things does it require? Yeah. And by bowling pin things, I mean the wood things.
I don't know, like maybe 20 bobbins?
Jeez.
I mean, it's not a huge amount, mm-hmm. but it's not a tiny amount. It might be fewer than that. And it's beautiful. It looks like stained glass. Mm-hmm. It sort of reminds me, I assume it's called rose ground because it looks a lot like rose windows okay. in stained glass. And, I mean, it's lace, so it's intended to be a bit on the ornate side, but this is, like, both very plain and very pretty mm-hmm. at the same time. Yeah. And, I did not think it was going to be that hard. I picked that pattern because I thought that I would be able to pick it up immediately and then just be able to hang out with my lace ladies and not have to focus so hard because I knew I was going to be around a bunch of people I wanted to talk to. And, no, it was a fail.
Oh.
But you got it in the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true. It's true. And I stood up and cheered, like, in the middle of the meeting.
Did you scream into the sea? I've done it, Ocean Grove. I've done it.
I was not in Ocean Grove anymore.
Oh.
It took me so long, I was no longer in Ocean Grove.
Oh.
It was a mess. But, do you guys have stories about terrible, terrible frustrations in your lives? Or hit me with them. Make me feel better.
Mine is, like, yours is impressive because it's a more complicated craft. I failed at punch needle embroidery.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't tried punch needle, but I'm pretty sure I'd be bad at it.
I could not get the yarn or the thread or the different things that I tried. I could not get it to stay in the fabric. And so I returned the punch needle. I thought, this is too frustrating for me.
You know what? Good for you. Just noping right on out of that.
That's right. But as noping. It's becoming more popular, I'm going, should I have given up? This seems silly. Like, to me, this should be the easy version of embroidery. I can't do it.
I understand. I can't cook in a crock pot to save my life. I'm not even joking. It's bad.
You guys, yeah. Are we too serious about crafts?
I mean...
No. That's a hard
no. Can you
no.
really ever be too serious about crafts?
I don't know.
I mean, we might push that limit. Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, like, so when I taught myself latch hook earlier this year, I might have mentioned latch hook once or twice on this podcast, maybe.
one or two.
But I, at first, just making the very basic latch hook knot, which is just a cow hitch or AKA a lark's head knot if you're into macrame. Like, it's simple. It's literally how you put fringe on a scarf. Completely easy. And it took me forever to, like, navigate the friggin' latch hook tool. For the first day, I was like, this is supposed to be simple, easy on my body in terms of, like, not risking tendonitis too much, and, like, something that I can do, like, out with friends. It's, like, a nice palate cleanser if I've been designing too hard and too much, which I have been this week. But, like, it was so challenging to get that action. And with anything else, I practiced it because I was bound and determined to make this latch hook vision I had become a thing. But it was a whole deal for the first day for me.
I don't remember. Like, I'm trying to, because I did it when I was a kid, I can't remember. I don't know if I'd be able to pick it back up again. But I'm thinking really hard about the tool, and now I'm second-guessing everything I thought I remembered. And
yeah.
I don't know.
I do think that it's been a long time since I tried it, but I feel like at the time, and I would have been a lot younger, but feeling definitely some confusion over how that tool works.
Yeah. I think it's because the latch part of the latch hook, so picture in your mind, if you will, a basic, like, cane or, like, a crochet hook or just a general, like, candy cane shaped hook. But they add a latch mechanism, but it flows open and closed loosely, like it doesn't lock closed or lock open, which when you get the action down for creating each latch hook knot, it makes sense. But the hardest thing is that since that latch moves almost 180 degrees so freely, navigating understanding, like, where to insert the hook under your rug canvas and back up, plus navigating the opening and closing of that latch and a scrap of yarn, it's a little awkward at first. But then I think what kept me going was the fact that latch hook is a craft very much done by children. And I was like, I should know how to, I should be able to figure this out. Like, I'm 30, like, I can do it.
I mean, okay.
Yeah. But yeah, and actually I did teach a latch hook workshop on Sunday, the last day of my disastrous barn vacation, culminated in me having to come back and immediately teach a latch hook workshop at my local yarn shop. And it was funny because the students in the class would self-identify as not particularly serious crafters. Like, they were like, I just want to learn the knot and how to, like, pick my colors and how to cut my yarn into strips, and that is what I want. And it was a 2-hour workshop, and it was so great. We got to actually chat and hang out. They got to go home with a kit, and they were so about crafting on their terms and in their way. And for me, as someone who, especially in this specific moment in time, like, coming back with this design still not done and stressed from a somewhat disastrous vacation, it was actually really refreshing to see people being like, I'm an adult person, but I really want to do something that I can just pick up and put down whenever I want, whether or not my kids are around, and get that creative, like, design itch scratched, but without having to do basically any math and without having to master more than just one technique. And it was so refreshing to be teaching in a space like that, instead of like a brioche class where you're like, are you a thrower or do you knit continental? Do you like to, you know, this or that? There's 30 different ways to do this stitch if you're knitting in the round or flat or one color or two colors. And let's not even talk about increasing in cables. Like,
oh, yeah.
And so it was just so refreshing to teach in that space.
Oh, that's really nice.
Yeah.
I often feel that way when I'm teaching beginner crochet classes.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, there's one active stitch. One active stitch, once you get a movement down, like, the chain is a bit much for some people starting out, but once you get one basic stitch down, you can probably build from there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really nice to encounter just, oh, this is a thing that someone might like to learn how to do to make a thing that isn't, like, their reason for living.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah. And the other nice thing about latch hook
go on
is that finished latch hook, because you're basically making shag rugs, they're really nice to pet or stroke.
Or stroke.
Oh, chicka-wawa.
Oh, no. I'm just picturing, like, oh, who is it? Is it Tom Selleck? Is he the Miami Vice guy?
I don't know, but his chest hair could inspire a latch hook work of art.
I'm just picturing him, like, lounging on a latch hook rug, like, in with full 80s stash.
So if anyone's confused, I'm trying to set up Molly for her next topic that we've given her a hard time about.
Because Molly would like to talk about stroking craft supplies. So let's just set this up for a moment. We can back up how we got here. I was scrolling through Instagram.
Okay, and, I'm done.
Which already sounds, now it's going to get, this could go badly in a hurry. I was scrolling through Instagram and I saw some beautiful embroidery hoops. This is very wholesome.
And were you feeling a certain way about those embroidery hoops, Molly?
I wasn't, but somebody else was. No,
okay.
They were these gorgeous wooden embroidery hoops, nice quality, beautiful, heavyweight brass hardware on it. And
ooh, yeah.
Yeah, I know. This is,
I'm into it.
Cover your children's ears right now. Anyway.
Tell me more about that brass hardware. Oh, no.
So I commented that these are beautiful, high-quality embroidery hoops. These are not the kinds of things that you just find at your local craft store, let alone, you know, anyway. Yeah. They're from Cloudcraft, which is a needlework store based in the UK, and I have designed...
Yes, I know all about those.
Yep, I've designed some needle minders with her. And so I commented on these hoops, and Nicole...
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, cool.
So Nicole, who owns Cloudcraft, said they are absolutely wonderful, and I've been stroking them. And then she asked, does that make me a very serious crafter? And I said, yes. And it also gets you a mention in the podcast because how do you know?
I agree.
Right? I mean, we're talking about lovingly stroking embroidery hoops. But the thing was, we all know that that's perfectly normal if you're a very serious crafter or even not. Because how many times have you all pulled out a skein of yarn or a stack of fabric or embroidery floss or any of those things, and you just look at them lovingly and you just have to touch them, and it's a very weird experience, but right, we have all done this. Please tell me we've all done this.
Or say a sewing machine on the way by, you just gotta run your finger across.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
As long as you don't lick that finger first, Haley.
Oh gosh.
That would be messy. I don't want to smudge.
There you go.
Of course. See? Not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does it sizzle when you touch it?
Only if the light's been on too long.
Oh. Sorry.
Oh my goodness.
Oh no.
We're all being very careful so that we can keep the clean rating iTunes. But I did get an email from my friend Katie in England, who is having some yarn shipped to me because it works out better that way. I'm going to see her soon, so I'm the transport. But I'm smuggling yarn into the country. But she told me that she was having some naughty yarn sent to me. And I asked her to clarify what that meant. It is just that she shouldn't really be buying more yarn, not that it's going to come in a skein shaped as something inappropriate, although it might. I don't know. It hasn't come yet.
I was trying to figure out how you would get to there. Like, what naughty yarn would entail. I can think of naughty patterns.
Yeah. Yes.
But, all right. Well, that does make a bit more sense.
Well, and I, of course, thought K-N-O-T-T-Y, and I was like, is she sending you stuff she can't untangle? Like, what kind of friend is this?
I would love that.
I like that Heidi went for the clean interpretation, and I was, like, right there in the gutter.
And I was just sitting here shaking my head.
Yeah, that's true.
So... But that's really funny. But now, although untangling knots in yarn is incredibly satisfying.
As someone whose design that they've been working on for several straight weeks is intarsia, I'm good on the whole knotted yarn situation.
I don't wish it on you. I'm just saying that, say, my best friend has been known to bring me her knotted yarn, and I have been known to spend many happy hours... piece by piece, untangling.
Well, it's like a puzzle.
Well, it's, I mean, it's not fun if I have to be doing anything else, but if I'm just, like, binge-watching Golden Girls or something like that, like, there's no reason that I can't be doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And since it's not my yarn, it doesn't matter. Like, there's no requirement that this problem gets solved, which makes it much easier to then solve that problem. Because there's no pressure. It's just like, eh.
Is it like attached to a project in the works, or is it?
Not usually.
Yeah, so that's when
it's like skeins that have.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like skeins that have exploded in some way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or like when you go to pull from the center and an entire wad comes out that you go, how did they wind this? I don't know.
Like, how did you even get to there?
Yeah.
Like, I get how fibers interlock, but you are not... That's not how that works.
Yeah, it was like I don't know. It was doing something in the middle of that skein of yarn that it shouldn't have been.
Being naughty.
Exactly.
Jeez, Molly, you just keep going there. But I mean,
I had to, you know, I had to bring it back to that a little bit, just because, hey, why not?
I mean, that's fair. Yeah. So, can I tell you about a craft supply that I specifically don't want to stroke because it's terrifying?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So, have you guys ever seen microwave kilns?
No.
Like K-I-L-N kiln?
No.
No.
So, turns out it's a thing that you can get for fusing glass.
Oh.
Interesting. Okay.
And I have one. It's definitely, like, when in full use, just looking at it through the door of the microwave is kind of like staring into the pits of hell. It is this, like, glowing, like, molten-looking thing.
Like, bubbly? Do you see bubbles?
Well, you can't see into it. Okay. It's just like it's like something inside is glowing.
Ugh.
It's like a cylinder that's two pieces, like a bottom part where you set the item to be melted, and then the top goes over it, and there's quite a bit of room between the platform and the top, and the top has a little hole cut into it, so as the glass is melting and fusing within this highly insulated kiln, it glows ominously. It's like, you know, you're doing something in a microwave you should never do in a microwave. Like, it looks really innocent until you're using it.
Mm-hmm.
And here, just allow me to read you the warning. I think it about says it all. Warning, this is not a toy. The glass fused inside this kiln can reach temperatures of 1400 to 1600 degrees Fahrenheit. It is capable of serious bodily harm and property damage if not handled accordingly. It is your responsibility and yours alone to use this kit correctly. Not for children under the age of 16.
Ooh, so not for children.
No. And it also comes with, like, these, like, heat safety gloves and multiple places on the packaging. It's informing you how you really need safety goggles. Like, it's a whole thing. And it is, it's just something else. And also included in these ridiculous instructions, because I guess either whomever was writing it was bad at translating, because there are many different languages included, and I don't know that I think that English was the original. There are also little hints sprinkled throughout the instructions that are labeled hot tip.
Oh my gosh.
That's good. I like that.
It is a dad joke.
There we go. I have brought an additional dad joke. So anyway, this thing is really, really terrifying, and I have had a project related to it on my to-make list for several years at this point, because I'm afraid I'm going to melt my microwave. And, I mean, I guess that's not a big deal, except a microwave emits radiation. Like, I'm afraid of this craft tool, and I'm not entirely sure why I'm allowed to have one in my home. Like, 1400 to 1600 degrees Fahrenheit?
Uh-uh.
What?
What's the actual kiln made out of? What material is it?
I don't know, actually. I was trying to figure that out, because I was trying to figure out what the gloves were made out of. Like, if they were, like, ceramic impregnated. It's some kind of, like, multi-layer ceramic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
With, like, heat shields.
Because it can't be metal, because it goes in the microwave.
Right.
Right. And it's not.
But it can't
but it's
melt,
got,
like the stuff inside is melting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, like, it's got heat-resistant fiber insulation. Like, it might there might be some, like, fiberglass or something involved. Like, there's a lot. Like, it's both a very simple thing, but I don't think it can be nearly as simple as it looks. But also, I don't quite understand all of the science going into why it works, because I can find good explanations for how big ones work, but I can't really find a solid explanation for how the small ones, like how something in a microwave is A, safe for me to use at temperatures that high.
Apparently it's not, but they're still letting you.
Right? Right. And like I think it needs to both heat up and cool down. It's sort of like cooking in an enameled cast iron Dutch oven. It wants to both heat up and cool down in like the oven. Mm-hmm. Well, this thing wants to do that in the microwave. And it's very scary. It's also very cool.
Yeah. And where does one find a microwave kiln?
You can get them on Amazon. Okay. You can actually get really suspiciously inexpensive, like just the kiln separately. I think I saw one for like $9. This is the thing that I have. It's called the FuseWorks microwave kiln, and it's a kit. And I think it retails for like $140 or something. So it's not an inexpensive, like on a whim sort of project, but it's also not, it's not as expensive as I think something that seems so dangerous to me should be.
That makes the $9 one even more terrifying.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
And I mean, I honestly don't know, like the kiln itself may be just that cheap to make. Like, it might not be nearly as complicated, excuse me, as I think it is, but it's very light, but anyway, it's, like, once it starts glowing and you're looking into it, like, you get this sudden feeling inside that you have made a terrible, terrible mistake, and I don't want to stroke it, is all I'm saying.
I think that's wise. I think that's very wise. Even with those fancy gloves on.
Yeah.
I mean, the gloves, they just aren't very thick. No. I mean, maybe for, like, you know, like, glass blowers have, like, some serious gloves that they use. Like, that would be overkill, I'm sure. But, I don't know how far overkill it would be, because that thing's scary.
I think all glass making is terrifying, and it's not anything I think I will ever do. Never.
I keep thinking I want to learn how to make beads, or, like, is that called lamp work, I think?
Something like that.
But I have not done it yet.
I was in an art appreciation class where the teacher presented beautifully about Dale Chihuly, and we got to watch a whole film about him, and I loved it. But you know, you hear the story of somebody losing an eye when they're doing their glass blowing, and it kind of makes you want to steer away from that craft.
Yeah. You know what I'm gonna get?
A healthy fear.
You want to know what I'm gonna get from knitting? Tendonitis. Probably not gonna lose an eye. Probably.
But I've got some double pointed needles that are seriously scary. They happen to be a thing. Like, I use them in the winter, which also happens to often coincide with me rewatching Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And I find myself, every time I'm using them, like, pocketing one when I go out to the kitchen, just in case there's a vampire out there. Because they are these seriously big, terrifying DPNs.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you could do some damage.
Well, I can
You're just probably not going to.
I can also confirm that the right size bamboo knitting needle will fit in an electric pencil sharpener if you let a child near your supplies and tools. Lost one that way.
Oh! Problems that never occurred to me to worry about.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
That was fun.
So I think what you're saying, Molly, is that I shouldn't send you a microwave kiln.
No. No, because I also have the story of a sibling who will remain nameless, who did not had not yet learned that you don't put metal things in the microwave, burned a hole the back of the microwave. Yeah.
Ooh. Oops.
The house didn't burn down.
That's what I'm worried about with this kiln.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. on that note.
I think that we could probably sign off. I don't think there's... I feel like a microwave kiln is a solid mic drop. Bye, guys.
Yeah, bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Very Serious Crafts podcast. Be sure to visit veryseriouscrafts.com for show notes, serious social media links, and more.